Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Fusion CBD products. I love Fusion CBD products. I love using CBD in my recovery after all my workouts. This stuff is great. Hemp infused. This stuff is grown locally here in the United States, and I love using their stuff. Their CBD Intense Relief Rub, their Hydro Drops, which I put in my coffee in the morning. They have a Cardio CBD Energy Mix, which you can use that before the workouts. Muscle and joint capsules that have turmeric in it mixed with CBD. It's great stuff. Check them out, FusionCBDProducts.com. Use the promo code SCHMO to get 20% off. Let's start this show. Hello there. Welcome back to the Schmo Zone, episode 41. I'm Dave Schmolenson, aka The Schmo. My co-host is
Helen E. Sports is the way to go.
Sports is the way to go. I love the red sweater, turtleneck.
Thank you. You know, it made me feel a bit festive. Holidays are around the corner. I've been drinking a lot of coffee with whipped cream. You know, I know your dad drinks that too. It's a great idea. I don't know why I never thought of it earlier. But yeah, so I saw this sweater. It reminded me of, you know, the season, the holidays. So yeah.
I know you have your eggnog too, but what is it with coffee with whipped cream? Why not just regular cream or milk or sugar like a normal person? What is it about whipped cream that you and my dad both like to use?
Well, since your dad, I don't know if he came up with this idea himself, but I definitely was influenced and inspired by when we went to Arizona. And shout out to your dad, Harold, because I saw him do that. And I'm like, you know what? That's a great freaking idea, right? Just coffee, whipped cream. Whipped cream, it's just really fun to eat. It tastes really good, you know, and then you can also add some sprinkles on top, some marshmallows if you want. So it's like healthy-ish because it's coffee. And then unhealthy, so you get a 2 for 2. So it's really good. And when it's cold outside, why not?
It's a bit excessive or extra, as some people like to say. I think I'm good with just adding a splash of like almond milk or cream if I'm feeling ambitious. But whipped cream is a little too much. But you can enjoy it for each their own, right?
Well, I know you're a very healthy eater, except when you go on your... What is it? Your frozen custard, the brownie ones.
Oh, yeah. The custard with the brownie mix. Everybody has their weaknesses. Like, yeah. We try to follow it to one cheat meal a week, right? And then my go-to is popcorn and ice cream. My weaknesses. Or I guess for ice cream, it could be gelato. It could be frozen custard, which you're referring to. We might as well just shout them out here in Las Vegas, Nielsen's, because that's the frozen custard you're talking about. They're vanilla with the brownie bites in them. Oh, my God. It's amazing.
It's so good. How would you rank that, though? Ice cream over frozen custard or over frozen yogurt, right?
All their textures are different. You got to throw gelato in there, too.
Yeah, gelato, of course.
It just depends, I think, for all of them, depends on the ingredients, how fresh the milk is, where the cows are from. It depends. If you have healthy and happy cows, I think there's this place in Connecticut that like literally massages their cows. And I've had their ice cream or custard before, and it was just next level. It's in New Haven. I'm pissed off that I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it was a really good spot.
Must be really good.
It's great. And then, there's always places. So I think it just depends on the fresh ingredients, but I'm a sucker for frozen custard or home-baked goods in general.
That just reminds me of when I weighed 217 pounds and how much, like, even McFlurry's ice cream I had to eat. Like, you have to eat a lot.
As a kid, I probably had a McFlurry remember the ice cream truck? You know, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do. They had different songs, and I completely botched that. But they literally had an ice cream truck come during the summer days, my cul-de-sac in Chicago all the time. And I probably had an ice cream stick or, like, a Baskin-Robbins or a McFlurry or a Culver's Concrete probably once or twice a week on average. That was terrible.
You were allowed to go buy them?
My parents didn't care. They didn't care about our diets as a kid. I had to learn the hard way when I was a teenager.
Well, mine were very strict, and I was a swimmer, so I think that's why after I quit, I just literally started eating everything, or I couldn't stop eating, and then I gained 80 pounds, I think. Yeah.
At least when we're on the road or prior to the pandemic, and even here when I'm cooking at home, I know I do eat more than you.
You do eat a lot.
I got at least 30 pounds on you now. I remember that's a big deal.
I know. He weighs 150, everyone. So 150. So everyone thinks I'm 120. I'm just okay. Kidding.
Hey, that's fair enough. Hey, let's talk a little MMA, some UFC, some big news.
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Well, right before that other big news, happy birthday to your mom.
Yes. My mom is turning, no need to say, but my mom's birthday is on Saturday. So actually, I'm flying in tonight to Arizona. You are coming in on Thursday.
Yeah.
And just everybody, we are about to who's tuning in for some MMA talk. We're about to get right into it. We're going to have a great guest showing up in about 20 minutes from now. But I figured this is a great format. We just start talking a little behind the scenes action, and we'll get into it. And then when the guest comes into it, I promise it will not disappoint. You probably clicked on this. You'll see it. Aljamain Sterling. 2 weeks from now, less than 2 weeks from now, UFC 255 headlining against Petr Yan. Going for bantamweight gold. Fight of his life. 256. Is it 255 or 256?
56. 55 is the flyweight.
Valentina. Yes. Oh, I got too excited. 2 weeks from now, it's Valentina Shevchenko and Jennifer Maia.
Who's been a guest.
Who's been a guest here. And it's also Davidson Figueiredo
and Alex
Perez for the flyweight championship. And then 256 in December. Is Aljamain Sterling. So we're catching him training. Not 2 weeks. Well, I'm just getting everything excited.
I know. And it's okay because I'm sure the time's going to fly. It's going to go by quick and it's going to feel like 2 weeks.
Yes. So we'll get to Aljamain and that fight in December, UFC 256. But let's talk about some relevant stuff right now.
Well, where do we start? Paul Felder.
Paul Felder, yes. The number 7th ranked UFC lightweight stepping in because Islam Makhachev had to pull out of the fight. A staph infection.
Yeah.
Has that been officially released now?
That's what I read, yes.
Okay, so that's what you read. That's, you know, some birdies flying behind the scenes that we know of, too. He has to pull out of the fight. RDA 155 going down. He started at this weight division, was the champion, the UFC lightweight champion at one point, went up to 170 pounds. Now he's back down here at 155. Here we are.
I know. And I remember when I spoke to Coach Jason Perillo months ago, he told me that RDA was actually trying to get back down to 155. I think doing like a test cut or try to see if he can get back down there. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited to see not only his return, but major props to Paul Felder, who's also been on this show before. He was supposed to commentate that fight card.
His versatility in such short amount of times is just incredible. And now, you know, he's been training for this Miami 70.3 half Ironman in March. And we saw him at Fight Island just, you know, running in the early hours in the morning, swimming in the pool, looking for pointers from you for swimming, biking. Not that they had real cycling bikes there to practice, but, you know, he still got on the bikes that were available and rode in the 8 mile radius that we were trapped in and quarantined in to cover fights on Fight Island. But the guy's just a beast. He's an absolute savage, an animal. And he didn't have any other fight plans kind of lined up in the next couple of weeks. Sure. You heard him throw his name in the hat when Michael Chandler's on Fight Island, you know, a potential showdown with him. But when he realized that Chandler wouldn't be in that top five, he's like, okay, he wanted to fight in that top five. Okay. Well, I'm not top five. You know, I'll just kind of sit on the sidelines, see what's coming to me. And lo and behold, this opportunity. Amazing. 5 days notice.
Exactly. And I think you also mentioned Michael Chandler, which I think at first when that news broke that Islam would be out, people were thinking, why not Michael Chandler? But I know, and he also told you, right, that he has other plans.
He says he has other plans. And you got to think of it from this perspective, too. He just cut to 155. Let's not forget what happened when someone like Tony Ferguson cut to 155. And then a couple weeks later, he's fighting Justin Gaethje at UFC 249. I'm not saying they're the same guys or it's comparable, but like when you're cutting so much weight in short amount of times and it's going to have an effect on your body, let's be real. It's the human anatomy, cutting that much weight, you know, in a frequent amount of time, like it's going to have its toll. And, you know, it's a lot to ask from. Everyone has their lives. Everyone has their families. Everyone's suffering through this pandemic to an extent. You're asking this guy to show up now on 5 days' notice when he's already been, you know, going through a whole training camp pretty much when he left Bellator after he beat Benson Henderson, and he's, you know, done his free agency. He was over there in Florida. He lives in Tennessee. You know, he's going back and forth between camp and training at home and going to Abu Dhabi. And now you ask him this, like, it's unfair to pin it on him necessarily. And if he does have other plans, let's see what those other plans are. I'm sure it's going to be exciting.
Exactly. Some other big news as well.
Well, let's continue on the Paul Felder thing, though, before we go there. I wanted to finish up on that. You know, it's interesting that I'm glad they're sticking this fight to 155. They're not making it a catchweight. They're not doing the schmo 165-pound weight division, not doing welterweight at 170, no type of catchweight or anything like that. And I think that's huge, especially for RDA, because he's going to prove that he can get back to this weight. You know, he still has it in him. I'll never forget how good he fought a couple of years ago, too, against, like, Robbie Lawler. Like, that was a great fight.
Exactly. And didn't the schmo...
I trained with RDA too.
Fun fact.
He has some legendary core exercises and beat my butt over at the Ruka gym in Costa Mesa, California with Coach Jason Perillo watching, of course. That was great content. So RDA, I know, has it in him. And with Paul Felder, I think he said this recently too, in an ESPN interview, that this is a win-win situation for him. Like, it doesn't hurt his stock, can only help his stock no matter the result. And I kind of agree with him there too. It adds to his legendary status. He's already thinking about what life could be after fighting the UFC. He's a hell of a commentator right now.
Yes.
One of the best for sure.
Absolutely.
That's out there, especially in a short amount of time. And now he's opening up his life to like triathlons and these endurance sports post-fight. The guy has a good head on his shoulders, and the future is very bright for him. So that's how I wanted to end the Paul Felder segment.
Great way to end it.
Great. So what were you saying for the next topic you wanted
to talk about?
Well,
there's so much that's going on because I do want to go over a few of the fights last weekend. Sorry, just spat on you.
It's okay. As the schmo, I spit on everybody pretty much, or at least that's what some of the people comment and say when I'm talking.
Have any of the fighters told you, like, when you spit on them by accident and then after they're
only,
like...
Only one I could think of, actually.
Who?
Derek Lewis, that time in February. Oh. It was his first time meeting me. It was February, what, 2018? Or
last year?
2019?
Oh, yes, 2019.
Almost 2 years ago, and we're at...
Main Street
Muay Thai in Houston.
Shout out to crew Bob Perez.
Yes. Shout out to him. And we sat down in the basement area where the weights are. We sat down on like a box, a jump box that you would for exercise. And we did an interview, had an interview, and I spat on his arm. He commented. He knew it.
Oh,
it was
my
funny,
gosh.
Though.
That is really funny. Yeah. Main Street Boxing Muay Thai. Great gym. Down in Houston. Derek Lewis has a fight this weekend, and I wish I could...
Two weekends, right?
Yeah, we're,
November
28th.
We're
all like, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah, getting the dates, speeding them up in our minds, because I think sometimes during this pandemic, every day starts to feel...
Yes.
You know, you lose track on what day it is, but I wish I could give him chicken feet again.
Yeah, well, what's exciting about him, he's the best blue belt in the state of Texas, and he's getting his grappling on, and we can get into this too, but he's going to be competing in Submission Underground in December.
Yes.
Is it December?
Yeah.
So he's against, Verdum? Who was his opponent? Ryan Bader, which is great, because Ryan Bader, his wrestling accolades, his wrestling background, former champ in Bellator. I mean, it's going to be an exciting fight. That Shug fight, Submission Submission Underground.
Yes.
We will get to that later on. If we don't get to that in the show, we'll talk about closer to the date. I'm excited for that. But get back to what you were saying. So, Derek Lewis is fighting November 28th against Curtis Blaydes. That's going to be an exciting fight.
Yeah.
Because the winner of that fight is right in the conversation of the title picture, but we're still on standstill for Stipe and Ngannou, and then also that throws the monkey wrench in there. What about John Jones? I still am convinced John Jones is going to take at least one fight at heavyweight before we see him fight Izzy. If Izzy does fight Jan Blachowicz and beats Jan Blachowicz, there's a lot of ifs here.
Yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of ifs and rewinding to last weekend's card, Glover Teixeira.
Ageless.
Yeah, his win over Thiago Santos, amazing. And now it's like, okay, where does Glover stand? Because I think he definitely earned his title shot.
He definitely has. And just put the 41 years of age aside, just look at who he's beaten in these past few fights, this five-fight winning streak, who he's gone through, mm-hmm. and how he's done it. It's just amazing. And it's like he's definitely hit this rebirth, the fountain of youth. It's funny because when the Schmo interviews Manny Pacquiao, the past two times I've interviewed him, we brought up the fountain of youth because Manny is in a very similar age, very similar situation where he's kind of had a resurgence in his boxing career like Glover Teixeira has in his MMA career. But what I've also said, too, is if you look at Glover, he's taken shots. Like Thiago Santos hits hard. Okay, he's taking shots and he's getting dropped, you know, he against Anthony Smith too. I mean, that was an impressive win. He's taken shots from these guys and he's got the chin to still withhold Kane consciousness, and then that grappling when they're on the ground. Glover Teixeira's jiu-jitsu, his grappling is amazing right now. It's always been, but like right now it's truly standing out. And I propose this question: who's got a better chin at over 40 years old in combat sports than Glover? I mean, some people say Yoel Romero. I'll argue Yoel Romero's neck, best neck in MMA, UFC, because that neck, I mean, if you want to connect what's strong, the head, the chin, the neck, whatever, we're getting little nitpicky here. I'm going to argue Yoel Romero's neck. God, that neck, it's amazing.
How do you strengthen it?
It's
like
amazing.
That?
And then everyone's going to say DC, Daniel Cormier. He does have an amazing chin, but I'm just going by, you know, the results, wins and losses here, and Glover's on five straight.
Yeah, and they're all in their 40s, the ones you mentioned. It's like, is 40 the new 30?
In many ways, with the modern science, we've had Jeff Nowitzki on this show. We talk about these modern athletes, bigger, stronger, faster. So I'm not opposed to Glover Teixeira getting that title shot, but then what do you do then with Izzy? Do you just
I want to see that way? Too. I mean, so it's hard.
Would you be upset? I mean, here's a crazy idea too, but like, you know, if you do give Glover the fight with Jan, I'm curious to see what Izzy and Whitaker would look like at light heavyweight. It's a little crazy. It might not mean anything. Oh. Do it at middleweight or light heavyweight. I don't care. Middleweight, fine. It actually means something. There's a belt on the line. But look, the only reason why I said the whole Whitaker thing just now is because I want to see Izzy at a higher weight because inevitably I want to see Israel versus John Jones. I think that fight has potential to be the biggest fight in UFC history in a fight that doesn't involve Conor McGregor.
Exactly. And hopefully it will go down at Allegiant Stadium. Hopefully by that time, the fans and everything will be able to attend big events. But you mentioned Conor McGregor.
Good segue.
Yeah. Other big news that happened today, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier 2, their rematch, it would be at 155. So when they first fought in September 2014, already 6 years ago, UFC 178, that was at featherweight at 145. So this rematch that's so far set to go down in January 23rd, it'd be 10 pounds heavier.
And I think that's the most underlooked point about everything you just brought up. Their first fight was at 145. They were talking about doing this fight at 170 before it signed on the dotted line at 155. You know, and it obviously, and Dana pointed out, it didn't make any sense. Both of them aren't competing at the welterweight division. But that's a huge point. Look at, they're very close in age. I think Dustin Poirier is a year younger than Conor McGregor. I think Conor's 32, Dustin's 31. They're in their primes right now. I would consider this their prime of their fighting career. And if you look at how much more both of these fighters have improved, you can make an argument to an extent that Dustin Poirier has improved more
so much, yes,
in his relative career than Conor has from that point in their fighting career. You can make that argument. I can't wait for this fight because this fight, you can have an argument. You couldn't have the argument when Connor beat Donald Cowboy Cerrone that, okay, Connor's right there in the title conversation. He's right there. We can talk about him next. You can make that argument with the Dustin Poirier. You can make that argument. But then you just look at the picture here, the title picture here. Does that just mean we have to see? Because now we have three guys and one fight to make between Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson, and Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson.
Dustin.
And who's the third one?
What do you mean? Connor.
So we have Connor fighting Dustin.
Yeah.
We have Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler.
Well.
And potentially, and Justin Gaethje. Gosh, it took me so long.
You said Justin Gaethje.
That's right. So there's one fight to make, and there's three guys. There's Michael Chandler. There's Tony Ferguson, and there's Justin Gaethje. Who fights who in those three? Because one guy's going to be left out.
True.
God, I hate for that one person to be left out to be Tony Ferguson.
I know.
For all he's done for this company, for stepping up and still fighting Justin Gaethje, 249, he could have waited for Khabib if he wanted to. Like, he had earned that to an extent. He definitely has. So if the three guys I just mentioned, it took me forever, so I apologize for those listening and watching.
You just confused me, though.
I did. I'm sorry, but... Tony Ferguson, again, just to clarify for the audience, Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje. There's three guys right there. Only two can fight.
Yeah, well, Tony and Justin already fought.
True. So what does that mean?
Michael Chandler.
And we wouldn't see that. So what does that mean? Is it Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson? Is it Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje, and you leave Tony Ferguson out? Is it Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler? Those are your options right there.
Also, we have to bring up a dark horse, Charles Oliveira.
And I'm glad you just brought that up.
Because he
is deserving to be in that four quadrant
He's
position.
On a freaking hot win streak. I know he's ranked below Dan Hooker, who is coming off that loss over Dustin Poirier, but Dan Hooker's still, you know, one of the top lightweights in the world, so we can't leave out Dan Hooker, but I think just that top six, and because Paul Felder's ranked number 7 and he's fighting this weekend, RDA. But so now I'm just looking at that top six and the Charles Oliveira, which I feel sometimes does get left out.
And I'm glad you brought up his name, because that's exactly where I want to take this. It's not three guys. It's four guys. I think that's it. And however you want to match it, and obviously we don't have to see Tony Ferguson right away fight Justin Gaethje next, but those four guys, throw in Charles Oliveira, you got Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. That's the matchups. You got to get those guys to overlap. And however you want to pick it stylistically, let the matchmaker, Sean Shelby, make it happen. But if you look at how to move this division forward, there it is. But then we throw in a dark horse. Ali.
I know.
Tweeted 30-0 today. There's some gamesmanship into that.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking this. Every single time there's been a big fight announcement to be made, or one someone's having their night, Conor McGregor's been tweeting something, trying to put some spotlight on himself. When it was Izzy's big night against Costa, he tweeted something out just to put something relative into perspective. Well, today the big fight announcement was made January 23rd, Poirier, McGregor 2. How do you steal some thunder from that? You get Ali tweeting 30-0. Habib's coming back.
Isn't that also what Dana mentioned a few weeks ago?
He did mention he was talking to him, and then he was talking to an outlet in Russia, RT Sport maybe, or somewhere in Russia, where he was saying, no, I'm done, 29-0. We're going to have mixed signals throughout this to the next couple weeks, couple months, and rightfully so. There's so much at play. We just talked about fights to be made. It could be one of those guys. We talked that there could be potential with GSP. You know, that's still there. There are so many good options. There's so many amazing fights. You know, money's there. Put that to the side. Legacy's here. So many fights can be made for an amazing legacy of 30-0. And so many of these potential outcomes. Then you can start. You know how I put the GOAT conversation to 29-0? I'm like, look, you know, so on and so forth. Depending on who Khabib fights for this 30th fight and wins in this 30th fight, that could really, really change the stock of the conversation of the greatest of all time.
Exactly. Man, that makes me excited for 2021, because I feel a lot of big things cooking. And one of the big things too, the return of the Ultimate Fighter. I also spoke to Colby Covington's head coach of MMA Masters, Daniel Valverde, yesterday. And he told me he would love to see Colby coach the Ultimate Fighter alongside, of course, Jorge Masvidal.
And that's what I pitched to Steve-O the other night, too. And Steve-O, shout out to him, the legend, man.
Great interview.
Thank you. Thank you. Second time. Steve-O crashed the media tent. He was watching
the fights.
He was
a media member.
He was a media member. So I'm like, look, we got to get the Schmo and Steve-O back together. I asked him about that because I know he's close with Jorge Masvidal. I think Jorge Masvidal gave him cauliflower ear. I think there was a stunt where he was giving him cauliflower ear that night I interviewed him.
Does he still have cauliflower ear?
I didn't see it. I was actually paying attention to it. He did not have it from what I noticed. But I said that to him. I'm like, you know, as the Schmo, I pitched that to him. I said, how about Colby Covington and Masvidal for the Ultimate Fighter?
Look, that would be freaking fun.
That's high drama. That's great content.
Literally
and great
high
fighters
drama.
Too. And you say, oh, there's no championship belt on the line. Bullshit. The BMF title. I don't care if it's a one-on-one.
We don't need a championship belt for that one.
You really don't.
And because, well, so his coach told me he would love that, and Colby is willing to do that, but they haven't heard from the UFC yet in regards to that. But I'm also hearing little rumblings that Colby could possibly return early 2021, January, February-ish. Again, I'm just hearing it. It's nothing is confirmed at all, but so it's hard to determine, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting because then of those lightweights that we talked about, those four, I think you could put any of those combinations in there for the Ultimate Fighter. Michael Chandler's expressed interest.
Yeah, you've said Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson as coaches.
As coaches, that would be fantastic too. Let me throw in a monkey wrench in this because I like to do that. Something that people haven't thought about. Who is making his return to the light heavyweight division this spring that we've confirmed with a guest on the show? Guest being Ali.
Rumble
Johnson. What about Rumble Johnson for the Ultimate Fighter as his return?
Oh.
I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch. I know, and
against
I can't wait to see him
though?
Fight. True. And then it's against two. I mean, there's so many good things. Hey, maybe it's a Glover to Teixeira if he doesn't get the fight with Jan Błachowicz. No, I mean, there's just a lot you can do. This is an exciting time in the sport. It really is. There's so many good options, and options are a great thing.
Exactly. Now the wheels are turning. I'm just trying to think. I'm like, which fighters would be really fun as coaches, right?
And what's so interesting about that too is who would Colby bring in as his coaches for the Ultimate Fighter? Who would be on the staff, and who would Jorge bring in for the staff too? It's interesting to see because there's obviously a ton of overlap, and there's a lot of competitiveness there, which always amazes me too, is because all these guys, throw Usman in there too, with his gym, Sanford MMA, where Chandler trains out of, all of these gyms are within like 20, 25 minutes apart from each other in South Florida where these guys train and work. You would think there's been so much opportunity for them to just see each other. Is it like small regional shows that they're going to or just out at the supermarket? Anywhere you can randomly bump into somebody, you would think that would happen. So I'm surprised it hasn't happened more.
True. Or maybe we don't know about it yet.
They don't talk about it. I ask them about it, whether it's in front of the camera or behind the scenes. I always make it a point to ask them about that because it always
intrigues
me. Like
if they run into each other.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, it's like the paparazzi are sleeping. They don't catch it on camera. I don't know. Jokes.
Yeah. Definitely more prevalent for that stuff, I feel like, in Los Angeles than in Miami. But it could be anywhere.
I was thinking that.
It could be anywhere, too. So the Ultimate Fighter, that's an exciting thing. I expect them to make an announcement for that at any time. But I think now is a great time to introduce our guest for the show today, the one and only Funkmaster, making his way on set. Hop in here however you want, man. Good timing. We're setting you up.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
We're good. Good to see you.
Good
to see you.
For this one, you could just talk right through the microphone, too. I know before it was a little different.
Actually, I can't really remember, to be honest.
I know. We did drink a little bit, man.
We did.
Oh, he takes it off on the beginning. You're good.
Is it that one? Or no, I think it's
It was supposed to be in the hole.
Oh, it's supposed to.
That's what she said.
Hey, he gets it right,
I
man.
I knew that was going to be a joke.
Well, thanks for coming into the Schmo Zone, man.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, man.
Nice outfit.
Thank you. You know, sponsored by Funkmaster himself.
Yeah. Where can your fans purchase that? Because I like the hat.
AljamainSterling.com. I have all my stuff. And I have a shirt and a hoodie for coming for that ass. Pause.
Well, awesome. if you have one in our size, we'll wear it on the podcast. We'll preview the fight that way.
That'd actually be pretty good.
We'll definitely do that. Well, thanks for hopping in. I got all my dates confused at the very beginning of the episode. I'm sitting over here thinking it's already December, thinking you're fighting 2 weeks from now. When it's UFC 255, it's the Valentina card. I'm like, shit, he's really coming in short notice for the fight. Then I remember, no, it's 256. Helen reminded me. You got your big fight against Peter Yan in December.
And not only that, but Amanda Nunes, she's out of her fight, so you're going to be the main event, right?
Honestly, I have no idea. No one said anything to me yet. I just decided to tweet to Dana because, I don't know, I was bored. But, yeah, all my friends, they know about this stuff faster than I do. I'm like, I can't even go on my phone anymore. It's just too much. It's almost like you get like mentally drained from trying to respond to everybody because normally I'm like that. So I have to like pick and choose times of the day where I'm like, all right, I'm going to dedicate this hour to like respond to fans and check my DMs. Because if I try to do it all throughout the day, I don't even want to work out. It's mentally draining.
It's taxing. Yeah. And you got to just have the ability to let go of it's okay. Yeah. The world's not going to end if you don't get to everybody, but you'll do your best and just forget about the rest.
Yeah, but normally I would know something like that. Oh, there's a fight fell through or the main event fell through, and then, you know, that would help me. But now I'm like, dude, I don't even want any part of it. It's too much.
Well, speaking of too much, and this is what I was flirting the idea with. Today they just announced Dustin Poirier McGregor for the 23rd card, and McGregor has been saying this whole time he wants the fight sooner. Then he's even proposed coming on your card in December for 256.
Really?
But I don't think that's going to happen because you got to have the main event be over a title, and obviously you and Jan is over gold. That's the main event.
Honestly, I'm okay with it.
McGregor and Poirier being the main and you being the co-main?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Conor's put his time in. Dustin Poirier put his time in. Both former champions. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's big enough name they could draw. I know that's what the UFC wants. I know it's a pay-per-view. They'd normally want to have title fights for that. They do have a title fight. So, honestly, I'm good with letting them do the most of the media. And we'll just, kind of kick back a little bit. And I'm sure Jan would be happy because he gets pay-per-view points. For me, I don't get anything until I take the belt from him. So, I don't really care either way. So, I just think it would be huge just to have that ambiance of the fight card being that much bigger with McGregor coming back for a rematch with Dustin Poirier.
Let's say, hypothetically, I don't think it's going to happen. Let's just say it does happen. You wouldn't get more money, potentially, at all, no. Just because you don't have the belt?
I think there's, like, a main event bonus that you get, I think.
Okay.
But I've never main evented, so I wouldn't know. And I've never been a co-main event, so I wouldn't know that either.
Well, things are changing now.
Yeah.
Things are changing
big. Yeah, we're excited,
I know, it's crazy.
Your fight.
It really is crazy, because I'm like, part of me still doesn't even feel like I'm fighting for a world title, because it's like, I've been in this game for so long that it's like, it just feels like another fight, even though it's a huge fight, but it doesn't feel real yet. I'm like, yeah, I know I'm fighting for the title now. Like Dana finally said it, but it doesn't feel like normal. Like if I got this shot, maybe after I was supposed to beat Brian Caraway, you know, when they laid that up for me. And if I had got it back then, maybe my eyes would have been a lot wider, brighter, you know, all that stuff. And, but now I just feel like I belong here. So it doesn't necessarily feel like the spectacle that it should be. But at the same time, I don't know if that makes sense, but it just feels like another fight. Like I'm just going in there, it's five rounds, and at the end of it, I get to make history.
Does it bother you at all, or did it bother you at all? This fight took so long to materialize. I had been pitching on your behalf for months, I feel like.
Thank you.
and I'm just shocked that it took so long to announce. It literally was not announced until after the Marlon Moraes fight, you know?
That was like their last Hail Mary. And I don't know if they were necessarily waiting for that, but it almost feels like that's what they were trying to do, build the anticipation to make people get a little bit riled up and pissed off at the UFC for not, like, you announced it, then you took it back, and then you said you don't know, and then you said maybe, then this other guy, how can you not give him a shot? He loses, then he's got some things to work on, and Frankie Edgar. It's just been a whole lot of obstacles for me to jump through, and I think my skill set shined through the way I beat Corey Sandhagen, who just came off of ridiculous performance over someone who knocked me out 3 years ago. You know? So I think that shows leaps and bounds my mental space back then, where it's at now, how deep this division is, and how good everybody can be on any given night. So I think me putting in that work beforehand, I think it kind of just solidified it just based on everyone else's performances. You had Aldo, you had Dominic Cruz. He did not look good. You had Aldo, who looked okay for like the first 3-4 minutes. And after that, he really just kind of just started to go downhill in that fight with Jan. And Jan just kept picking up speed. And then you have Marlon, who I was always skeptical about because I always felt like he was a first-round fighter. And outside of that, you know, if he didn't catch you in the first round, he was going to be in some trouble. And I think we got to see that as well. And I think the cream rises to the top, you know. And I think myself, Peter Jan, and Corey Sandhagen, I think we're the top guys right now. You got Dillashaw in the wings right now. You got Frankie. Frankie could still, you know, throw, but you saw his fight with Pedro Munhoz. I mean, it was a good performance, but at the same time, I really thought Pedro won that fight.
Yeah, I saw it going both ways. There's a lot of people that said that, but I want to get to you real quick. Go back to the Sandhagen fight. You beat him in 88 seconds, and then Crazy. To see how he Crazy. Performed against Marlon Moraes, what was your initial gut instinct right after that fight when you saw that performance? Did you just have this awe-type moment, like something left off of your shoulders, like, yeah, no matter what, they have to give me this title shot now?
Oh, 1,000%. I even felt like that was the title fight right there. I felt we were the best guys. He just beat Rafael Sunsal pretty convincingly, who was the highest ranked guy. Jan didn't fight anyone in the top five. No disrespect to him. He did what he had to do with the guys that they put in front of him, but at the same time, he didn't beat anybody that could make him say, all right, he should be fighting for the title or he deserves a title shot. I'm not saying now, if he had gotten another fight over a top five opponent, I've beat three guys in the top five. Corey Sandhagen, he beat the number one contender guy, and he lost to me, so that puts him right behind me. And then you have Petr Yan, whose biggest win to date before Aldo was Uriah Faber. And no disrespect to him, but his best days are definitely behind him. You know, a young Uriah Faber walks through some of those punches and can at least drag him down to the floor to make that fight a little bit more interesting. I'm not saying a prime Faber beats him, but I'm just saying I think times have definitely changed, and I think that fight between Sandhagen and I was definitely the real title fight for the uncrowned champ, and Jan versus Aldo, he's coming off of a loss. You do him into a title fight, Dana. Like, I don't even understand that. You know, you're setting a new precedent for anything, you know? It's the UFC's organization. They're going to do what they want to do, so when I won, I thought that was definitely it, and I knew if Sandhagen had won that night, he would have gotten the shot no questions asked, because he's the new shiny thing that the UFC wanted to push. And I've been that shiny thing before, so I know what that's like with all that pressure. And I think he kind of ran into a bit of an obstacle the same way I ran into a bit of an obstacle taking a short notice fight with Marlon Moraes. And I think he's, as you've seen, he's going to come back better, you know? And that just goes to show how good this division is. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited. It's exciting times for everybody.
But in many ways, are you more glad that you're getting that title shot now as opposed to years ago?
In hindsight, it's 2020. I think I'm definitely a lot better. I don't think I overreact to strikes coming my way defensively the way I used to. I used to step back a ton, and there would be really no space to counter because I was just so far gone. Now I'm sliding out of the way where I can counter strike. I can slip in for my takedowns a little bit more efficiently, and I just think I'm a little bit more educated, a little bit more poised, and I understand distance, I understand timing, I understand where my headspace needs to be, which Sandhagen touched on, talking about how he approached the fight with me, and I've been there. I've been there with Marlon. It was almost the exact same thing he described. I felt that exact same feeling when I made that walk. It didn't feel like I had any nerves or anything, and it was just like a practice, and just wasn't a good night, you know? So I think I got more time to develop. I could have used the money back then, you know, fighting for the title earlier. So that's always like, you know, in the back of my mind. But at the same time, having this one opportunity, you never know how many of them you're going to get. So I think now is the time where I have the best chance of seizing it in comparison to where my skill set was a couple of years ago.
after you beat Sanhagen, shortly after you became a homeowner here in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You're a Las Vegas resident, or soon to be if it's not official yet.
I voted here.
You voted here. He is officially a Las Vegas resident. But you're also going back a little bit to New York,
yes,
and you're training at Cerro Longo, right?
Or, yep, for sure, yeah.
Where have you thought about this yet? Has it been official? Who's going to be in your corner for this upcoming fight? Because I know this is a big time decision for you, man.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of questions about this. People think I kind of like abandoned my team, which I definitely did not do. So I got to speak to the UFC brass, and we got to figure everything out. So here's my situation. When I fought Sanhagen, the coronavirus was still kind of in a high peak, I guess, with everyone being scared. And, you know, that's just the way I describe it because I have my own thoughts. But
we all do.
Yeah, and everyone hates me for it because I voice my opinion. But at the end of the day, you have an opinion. I do too. Yours doesn't always, whatever. So Sanhagen, you can only train at the fighter hotel because I didn't have a house. You can only train with the people that's going to be in your corner. So for me to lose weight, I don't necessarily always hit pads with Ray. I hit like every so once in a while. And for that training camp, I did all my training in Al's garage. And I might have snuck into the gym, I think, 4 times. And one time was for the UFC countdown that they didn't even air, which pissed me off. I was like, well, that's just a slap in the face. But it was pretty good footage, I think. So having Ray, having Matt, and having Al's knees were still jacked. Ray's obviously a lot bigger than me. Again, I don't hit pads to lose weight. I'm a pretty big bantamweight to cut weight, and then Matt's not really my size, and he's not the stature of a Corey Sanhagen, who's 5'10", very, very skinny. You know, so in terms of having the ideal fight week, it didn't make a ton of sense for them to come out, and they weren't there for the entire training camp. You know, so I would send them the sparring. They would get to watch. They would send me back tips and notes and stuff. We would talk on the phone, but that was pretty much it. So now this time, now that I have a house, I spoke to them about the same thing because that was my number one concern. For me to cut weight, it's a task, man. I walk around 165, 170 when I'm not cutting weight, when I'm not training. So I can get pretty heavy, and I'm pretty lean. So when I get down, it has to be very particular how I get my weight down, and I don't hit pads to do it. I don't run on the treadmill for 1-2 hours like some of these other guys. I think that's just absolutely crazy, and you're just fatiguing your muscles even further than they've been depleted already. So I do mine in a completely different way. I've been doing it my entire career. And now that I have the house, I can quarantine at my house. I can have my coaches and training partners that I'm going to be using like strictly just those specific bodies. And then during the fight week, same thing. And then Friday, we have to quarantine at the fighter hotel. So all the work is going to be done. So this actually works out where I can get the best of both worlds. I can have the training partners that I need to still mimic Jan, still get the right things to dial in the fight, the last few days of preparation, and I can still have my coaches in the corner.
So who's going to be your 4 coaches in the corner?
So I'm thinking Matt, Ray, and I want to have Eric in there too. And the fourth one is still up for discussion because I want to make sure that fourth person is going to be someone I can still move with on the day of the fight. You know, so I still have to do my morning shakeout and I have to do my warm up before we make the walk. So I just want to make sure I'm giving myself the best opportunity to win. And it's kind of weird, you know, because most people, they leave their gym when they lose. You know, you're seeing someone, I'm not necessarily leaving my gym, but I am making a transition, you know, moving out of state so that, one, financial reasons, two, my future, and 3, just to get a different look. You know, it's good to get a different shakeup compared to doing the same thing over and over and over. So that's been huge for me.
And sure, when you made this decision too, like with this pandemic, there's such an unknown, and what's going on in New York is very different than what's going on in Las Vegas.
Very.
This is like literally the fight capital of the world, not in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
If it's Abu Dhabi Fight Island, it's here. It's one of the two. It's 1A, 1B. So you're picking a decision based off of your best future outcomes.
Yeah, for sure. And New York is not open. You know, gyms are still closed, like MMA gyms. And regular gyms are open at like 33% capacity, which is such a weird, it's so weird. I don't know. I can't make sense out of this whole thing because you can eat outside. You don't have to wear your mask, but you can eat outside because it's getting cold in New York.
Right.
But now they got these tents. So you can eat outside in the tent without, it's just the rules make no sense. And it's almost like you're insulting everyone's intelligence by pretending we're being safer. It's so ridiculous.
We've talked about this before. It's like there's so many people that are just making up rules on the fly. Yeah. Everyone, adulthood is literally pretending and faking it until you acting like you have all the answers when you clearly don't. What gets me is when you see people driving their cars with the masks when it makes no sense. I get the safety
that
of
drives
it.
Me nuts.
I get the premise of everything, and I'm truly for it. But when you start creating a double standard and making up rules, like you know, when you sit down, you can take your mask off when you're eating or drinking and stuff like that. It's like, and then you set this double standard for it. It makes no sense. So yeah. I feel you on that. I totally feel you on that.
I was attacked for saying that make masks optional. I think if you're a business owner and you want to make it optional, you should have that right. You know, I'm not saying masks don't work. I'm not an anti-masker, as they call me. I'm not saying masks don't work.
You saw what Bryce Mitchell said in his post-fight press conference?
I think you should at least have the option. And I think that's very fair for people to say and to try to say that you're a fighter, you're dumb because you get hit in the head. I'm like, I'm college educated. I'm pretty sure a lot of these knuckleheads out there don't know anything. And I don't know if you guys watched the movie Venom. I'm a big Marvel.
I did see Venom.
And you know how it's like a little amoeba or whatever it is, and it's crawling on the floor, and then it jumps on you. People are acting like coronavirus is like that.
There's
like,
a big difference between a virus and a disease, and throughout this entire time, people have confused the two. They've treated this like a disease, like an HIV or an AIDS that can kill you, that stays with you for life. You know, this, I'm not saying it can't kill you, especially if you have pre-existing conditions, but I'm a statistics guy, I'm a numbers guy, and I look at it, and I look at how many people get the flu, I look at how many people recover. If you take care of yourself, and you take care of your immune system, and you do the proper things first, and then you talk about the mask. Like when you have a bandana or a piece of cloth versus a real N95, there's a difference there.
Big difference.
There's not enough full scientific evidence to prove one way or another.
Yeah.
We were talking to a fighter that I think it was Walt Harris. Harris, who had the coronavirus, his family.
My girlfriend had it.
And your girlfriend had it. And you lived with them.
I slept in the bed with her for about 3-4 nights.
Yes.
Helped her do a lot of things for those days. And I just took my antibody test last week. Nothing.
It doesn't make sense.
It's so bizarre.
So Walt did the same thing. His wife had it, and his wife and his kids in the same house did not get it. Did not get it. Just like how your situation's right there, too. It's amazing, too. And I think Jared Flash Gordon, his fiance, she had it. He never got it. He had the false test. I mean, it's bizarre to pinpoint it. But let's go back.
I was going to say you're triggering the people right now.
Oh, they're going to trigger a lot of people.
Warriors coming out.
Yeah.
We're going to get told we're stupid. We're not doctors. Obviously, I've never claimed that. I'm just using logical sense and saying, I just don't think it's as contagious as they're making it seem. Like, if I touch your hand, oh, man, you have the COVID. Like, I don't think it works like that.
Yeah,
it's got to be a concentration level. Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to compare it to other highly transmittable.
Yeah, my viruses, argument whatever. Is very simple. We don't have enough information. Nothing's the end all be all. We don't have the science to prove X, Y, and Z because things have proven we don't have X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You know, and we come from a country where things are choice and everything. I hear what you're saying.
Well, let's keep a business at 50% capacity and see if they can stay afloat. Small businesses, because they couldn't make ends meet before.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden in New York, they can do that at 50%. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is. We probably pissed off a lot of people. Let's go back, though, to some
MMA.
Sorry,
guys.
No, it's fair.
I'm sorry, people. I'm sorry.
I love it. We're fired up. I want to go back to something. TJ Dillashaw in your division. His suspension ends in January.
Welcome back.
Where do you want to see him fight next? Do you think he's deserving of a top five guy? Who do you think would be rightful in your loaded division, which I'm sure you'd argue is the most stacked division right now in the UFC?
Yeah, 100%. I think Corey Sandhagen would be a good fight. I think top five. I'm not necessarily sure if he deserves a number one contender fight right away, but at the same time, it was the reigning champion at the weight class. He never actually lost the belt at 135. No, he just went down to 125.
Yeah, 125 and lost to Cejudo.
He got popped. But there is a lot of speculation that where there's smoke, there's fire. And I still always go back to that interview conference thing that they had between him and Cody Garbrandt. And Cody Garbrandt at the conference said aloud to everybody, "Hey, you showed everyone how it's done. You showed everyone how to do it. You showed everyone," in that voice that he does where he thinks he's so cool. And no one said anything about it. So if it was way back then, I'm a big believer where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'm pretty sure I've heard stories and tales that he's been doing stuff for a very long time. So a lot of those wins, man, to me, makes me question, like, were they really legitimate wins? You see how he doesn't get tired and he has these phenomenal performances and there's like almost zero drop off. Very questionable. But to answer the question, it'd be nice to welcome him back to the division. I saw a couple of his pictures. I like to stalk guys that I might potentially fight. And he's looking big, man. He's looking jacked. So welcome back, T. Welcome back.
What's amazing, too, is we've had Jeff Nowitzki on the show. They do not test for EPO every time. It's too expensive. And he had mentioned how the urine test is a better test than a blood test. But I'm surprised that they don't test more for EPO than they do. I never fully came to grips onto what the ending of that conversation, but I think it's a serious thing. When there's advantages to be had and you have money, they can be had.
Yeah, for sure. And I look at TJ's run, and I'm like, if there's ever a time or ever a situation that looks super beneficial and like, hey, this might be worth it, it's TJ Dillashaw. The guy bought boats. He bought houses. He's opened up his own seasoning company and stuff. And
he's got a juice place, too.
He's got a juice place.
Clean juice.
He's made, like, which is very ironic, but it's fascinating to see that he made over hand over fist, and in his case, cheating was worth it. For somebody 100%. Else, there's been people who've gotten caught doing way less, or probably like their first or second fight within the UFC. So at that point, it's kind of like risk versus reward. It's crazy. It's fascinating because I know a lot of other guys. I think that guy Ali Bagatinov, he fought Demetrius Johnson. He popped for EPO as well, but it's weird because I don't know when they test for it, when they don't.
It's random.
It's very random. So I don't know when they're going to spend the money on it, but it'd be nice to see some of these guys who are cardio machines. Hey, man, I get tired. I have no problem saying that I get tired. And, you know, if it's in the fight, I'll poker face it, but I definitely get tired. And that's a normal thing. If you don't get tired, there's something wrong with that. You could tell yourself, yeah, I'm not tired, but really, dude, come on. You can't go 100 miles an hour and not slow down at all. That's not humanly possible.
Well, for TJ, do you think that punishment was enough? Or what do you think the punishment should be for those fighters that get caught?
I tell you what, he ruined a lot of careers. He gave a lot of people brain damage. And he took a lot of money out of people's families from, you know, their household. So I don't really know what the correct answer is for that. It's hard for me to say you should pay a fine. I do think there should be some type of financial compensation or penalty for you to come back into the sport. And then it muddies the waters a little bit because some people, they do get popped for very rare circumstances where they really didn't do anything wrong, allegedly, you know? So it makes it tough to really say. I take whatever the UFC says is good. I used to take this other supplement, which was third-party tested. Anything I take third-party tested, I get it from UFC. So this way I have no reasoning to ever have something, unless I go out and do something really stupid, but I don't do drugs. I mean, I might smoke a little here and there, and I drink alcohol. That's it. I don't do anything else. I'm not taking stuff from other people so I can be like, you know, I just think when you're at a certain age and you're this high level, you should have a little bit more responsibility over what you put in your body. I understand you want to have fun. You're young and you kind of like the whole John Jones, the dick pills thing. I'm like, I don't know. I just think some things are just crazy. Like at that point, why not just go get Viagra? Something that's going to pass and not get you into some shit. I don't know.
On the whole marijuana thing, what amazed me too is because I think there was a couple of fighters that tested positive here in Nevada for marijuana. And let's be honest with the conversation. Getting high, smoking marijuana, taking marijuana is so much better for your body than the painkillers and everything like that. Like if you're Brett Favre and you're popping painkillers before every football game versus being stoned, I mean, there's going to be a huge difference in what it does to your body. But what amazes me, what Dana had said, is we can't have fighters showing up high to a fight. That was kind of his response. Do you think there are fighters that actually go into the octagon stoned?
I know people that smoke every day. They come to training high. They spar high. It's fascinating. So it could be a psychological advantage for them in particular, not for me. I don't think one shoe fits all. I just think it depends on the individual. But I do think there are some people who are ballsy enough to smoke before competition. I don't know. That's what they do. If it whatever floats your boat.
But is that even an advantage?
Not for me. For other people, I see them be able to slow down time. The nerves calm down. They can relax a little bit. They see clearer. They can think better and process the moves and situation better. I think it's dangerous as fuck. Like, people swinging haymakers at me, I like to see that in real time speed, not thinking it's slower. And then it's like, oh shit, I got cracked and I'm waking up, you know? So I don't know. I think everyone is different. Everyone is super different, but I agree with Dana. I don't think people should be in the cage. I don't think there's enough data to show like, hey man, this is beneficial or this could be very dangerous for you to show up to the octagon stoned.
Yeah, I just wonder if those tests were correlated to like right after competition. Like they took them, they tested them, and they were high right after competition, meaning they were stoned inside the octagon.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I think like what you mentioned, it is all mental, right?
Yeah.
Like
I
if
think
you
so.
Whatever you want to believe.
Yeah, if it works for you. I know people say they can work and do a ton of work all day long smoking weed. And I'm like, dude, if I smoke and try to do work, that's it. My day is done. I don't have any. There is no work to be done. My day is KO'd. Like that's a day just gone to the wind, you know. So, I can actually drink a beer, one, two, and actually get work done. Like I said, everyone is different. I see people who can sit down, smoke their weed, and they could super impressive. Super impressive. I don't function like that.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
It might work. I don't know. It might work.
Good stuff. Any final thoughts, Funkmaster? Get you final notes? December 12th. Yeah.
December 12th.
Yeah. And how do you envision that fight playing out?
Yes, that's a good way.
You know, it's kind of like the Corey Sandhagen fight. I did visualize a lot of different ways that fight could have went. And I made up my mind that that's how I wanted the fight to go the day of the fight. And I just told the guys in the morning, I said, you know what? I'm just going to go right at him, take him down, and just see what happens. I'm gonna see if I get him down, great. If I don't, then we're standing up and we're fighting for a bit, you know. So I don't know if that's necessarily gonna be my approach with this one for Jan, but I do think to be in his face, make him respect that I do have some punching power because he thinks he's just gonna walk through my shots. I think that's what he honestly thinks. I posted something on Twitter and his response was, "You won't be able to hurt me," or something like that. Your shots won't hurt me. When I hit you, I'm gonna hurt you. I'm like, that may be true. You do put all your body weight into your punches. And I did make sure I pointed out, I was like, if you throw your punches where you're falling over, like you've done in your past, that's going to be a huge advantage for me. So I'll be looking forward to seeing his approach. And I think it's going to be more of a chess match and just seeing who decides to make that mistake first. If he overcommits, he's going to be on his ass or he's going to be against the cage. I might have to Kamaru Usman him, break his toes a little bit, eventually take him down. And I think it's going to be a battle of attrition. I don't see him breaking. I don't see him quitting. And if I do get him in a submission, I don't see him tapping. I can see him going to sleep as well.
Excellent.
Well said.
Well said. This is episode 41 of the Schmo Zone podcast. We are out.